Welcome everybody to episode 87 of the You Can't Comp This NBA Trading Card Podcast. We are your hosts, Adam, Amy, and Russell Gibson. What an intro. Flashback to the 80s.
I know, my inner David Hasselhoff was like emerging.
I know, I just want to go home. After this, going to go and binge watch some Knight Rider.
Just like immediate segue, Guardians of the Galaxy 3, the soundtrack of that.
Yes.
If you go on the Spotify playlist of that, there's this amazing David Hasselhoff, he's spoofing himself, really. And the film clip to that is just like amazing. So when you're washing your dishes, lads, if you want to put a bit of that on, like A plus, doesn't get any better.
Entertainment plus, yep. With the Hoff. We've derailed and we haven't even finished the intro. I
haven't even started. We're not even like a minute.
That's it. What's been going on? Do we want to say a big thank you to our sponsor, EJ Cards?
100%. Let's just dive straight into EJ Cards because they had their trade day today. And I can only describe the turnout as phenomenal.
Yeah.
And there was just people there all day. And as soon as one person left, you know, another person just came through the door. And I don't want to overestimate, but also underestimate. I would say there was at least 150 people that went through the doors today and probably even more.
Yeah.
The turnout was just fantastic. I think the vibe there was just really, really good. Mm. There was just a lot of people there and just, you know, trading, talking, buying, selling. And the thing, I was actually talking to my wife about this, it was really good to see children there with their families.
Yeah.
And it just gave it that really nice sort of family atmosphere. I liked that a lot. And they sold out of their basketball repacks. They had to build up some more. Rimp was doing that in real time there.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of Pokemon guys there too, which was, you know, quite good to see. Dion was there that we've met previously at the last trade show. So just fantastic show out, and just congratulations to the boys at EJ for, you know, putting it all together. And then also to their new shop, look fantastic. So just keep up the work with that, lads. Just fantastic stuff. So
yeah.
Diving.
I wish I could have gone, actually. I'm just sort of.
You had really more important things to do.
Look,
to be fair.
I wish I didn't have a work thing on. So that's all right. Next time.
Life gets in the way sometimes, Ad, doesn't it?
It does. All right. What have we got on the docket?
I think we should talk about Carmelo Anthony. He's recently announced his retirement. I think we should give him his 2 seconds in the sun. And I want to start with, what's your favorite Carmelo? Houston, New York, Denver, Hoodie Carmelo was one that was brought up. And my personal favorite was USA. I just thought, as a USA basketball player, where he could play that power forward role and not be too undersized, he was just unstoppable.
I have to say, and there was just something. Team USA Melo, come on.
He just had a little bit of extra confidence, and I suppose also the shorter three-point line probably helped him, you know, just a little bit too, but he was such an amazing international basketball player, so that was definitely my favorite.
Yeah. It was, look, Melo, unfortunately, wasn't, I suppose, didn't get to the lofty heights, or didn't get to the promised land in NBA land, but he did.
Yeah,
on the international scene for the United States. So I guess that's why I'm a big fan of Team USA. Melo had a huge impact. He was a big reason. He was a lot of drive for them with Team USA. I thought it was pretty funny. I chuckled a bit when the announcement came and the first thing said, Carmelo's retiring a Laker. I'm like, and no, he hasn't been on a roster for the better part of the season. I don't think he's retiring a Laker. I think he's just retiring from basketball.
If he does get his jersey retired, of all the teams he's played for, who do you think will retire?
New York, without a doubt.
Okay. Really?
I think it's a New York thing. I think, like, it's definitely not, it's not the sort of running around at other teams. I think it's that when he was in New York is when he was at his most, what's the word? Impactful. I feel like in New York.
Okay.
But he was the guy in New York. That was the thing. He was always the guy in New York.
Yeah.
Be it good or bad.
My initial thought was Denver.
Okay.
And I was just really quickly counting up how many years he played for Denver then. So basically he played there for 7 years.
Yeah.
And then 7 years in New York. So it was pretty much split evenly. So I suppose you could almost flip a coin there, couldn't you, really? I just have more sort of favorable memories of him playing more impactful basketball, particularly in the postseason for Denver. I sort of remember him like George Karl, Kenyon Martin, and then they sort of had that next team where it was like Chauncey Billups, and then Iverson was there for a little bit. They were quite formidable teams, weren't they?
Yeah.
A little bit. And look, I must confess my following of New York basketball wasn't great, but how far did they get in the postseason? I don't remember them doing anything sort of spectacular, because my recollection was they put their money into Hume and then Amari Stoudemire, and then Stoudemire sort of spent more than 50% of that contract, you know, with his knees wrapped up with ice and big pads. Like, he was,
all part of the gig, getting paid lots of money, I guess.
Fantastic career. And,
you
know, I think we do need to pay some respects to him. And I think card-wise, dug out a couple of cards that I thought are, you know, worth talking about. His rookie card is from Upper Deck, and they made this set called Exquisite. I might even put it onto social media, actually, just to, into the thread that we put up. So I found two comps that I thought was, you know, really, really interesting. 11 out of 15, BGS 8.5. It last sold for $36,000 USD. So, yeah, that was my immediate reaction, right? And it sort of made me think, well, maybe there's nothing, you know, here that I'd ever be able to get my hands on. And I still probably think that. But I did find some cheaper options. So, again, the Exquisite patch autograph, numbered to 99. That last sold for $6,000. Now, there was two really interesting things for me about this card is that I actually thought the patch on the 99 looked better than the patch on the number to 15. And then the second thing was the card letter value on it. So I actually want to reach out to the guys from Card Ladder to get their opinion on this, but the card letter value had it at 3,500, which is way under the 6,000 that it last sold for. So
Interesting.
Do you wait and hope that it sort of slides down a little bit and comes into that sort of 3.5 range, if you believe in the card letter stats, obviously? But yeah, so the guys put up some really cool cards up here too. So Adam Tindall put up this beautiful Spectra gold patch autograph. That's absolutely beautiful. James Mann put up an autograph. Now, the interesting one about that one is actually it's a sticker autograph, but instead of having that clear Panini one with the sort of the tamper evidence seal or printing on it, it's probably a better word, isn't it? It's like a silver autograph. So that's
I like that. Yeah.
I think on some cards that would work, and obviously on other cards, not so.
Yeah, it's true. That's true.
I think that particular card would have looked amazing if it was an on-card autograph with it being the clear card, and he could have just signed it across the backboard. That would be pretty sweet. And then I think the next one we have to mention is this one here from Andrew Hewitt.
To the triple auto. Wow.
LeBron, Dwight, and Carmelo. That's quite nice.
Do you know if that wasn't Dwight and that was like Chris Paul or like one of his other...
Yeah, huge card.
God. It's, yeah, okay. Just the LeBron auto on it, though, is a big thing, but it's crazy. About Melo.
And then probably the last one to go through is from Eidos. So this LeBron Carmelo showdown series, SGC graded to 8. It's a beautiful card, mate.
Yeah, beautiful card. It's amazing.
Do you have much LaMelo in your PC?
Nah.
How come?
He's never been a player that I've sort of, I don't know. I had a nice number to 10 patch auto that I pulled. I can't even remember. I think it was Spectra. It was back a while ago, I think 2016. It was a redemption though, and I don't think it ever came. But I remember that was the only Carmelo card I ever really put any stock in.
Yeah. I put him a little bit in the same compartment in my mind as Westbrook, where I think he was chasing numbers for a few years, and that does make it off-putting a little bit for me. But I suppose this is the follow-up question to that is, do you think he'll be in the Hall of Fame?
That's a tough one, isn't it?
Because he did win the national championship at college. Then he won the Olympic medals, like you highlighted before. And then he played for 18 years. Like, albeit some of these seasons weren't full seasons, but that's a very, you know, it's a large body of work.
Yeah.
I think he will
end up in the Hall of Fame, yes.
Like, we've got Ben Wallace in there, you know.
If that's the benchmark, right, you've sort of, you make a good point.
I suppose, I mean, Ben Wallace was a champion, wasn't he? Maybe it'll come down to that. Yeah, but so I suspect at one point I'm going to be chasing a Carmelo, because if I'm going to continue doing this Hall of Fame chase.
You've got to do it.
Yeah.
You've got to do it.
So that's kind of, I'm actually not upset about it. I think there's worse players to, you know, be chucking into a box than Carmelo, but
this is true.
Next thing on the feed is Ja Morant versus Jamal Murray. Now,
This is a game of snakes and ladders, isn't it?
Absolutely. And this is really a follow on from last week's show, but I will admit this whole Ja Morant thing has been on my mind. And if you didn't listen to last week's show, basically what we're talking about was the massive slide that Jairus has undertaken. And we're really prospecting on, is he going to be dipping down further? Keeping in mind that there's a long time between now and the season starting. And then if he does, you know, very slowly slide down during that time, and then he goes through a suspension of say 1, 2, 3, or 4 months, you know, how much more is this guy going to slide down? So his last sold price was $400 USD.
Yep.
Now, I think the reason why this gets super juicy is because Jamal Murray is now selling at $428 USD for a silver PSA 10. So, you know, which one are you picking up at the moment? Are you picking up the card that has maybe the highest ceiling being Ja Morant, but also has the slide down? Or are you leaning towards the Jamal Murray, who's essentially turned out to be a very dependable player? Like, yes, obviously there's that very big peak and trough there. But look, if you remember us discussing Jamal Murray a while back, my shock was with him was how steadily his price has held even when he was injured.
Yeah.
Because he was out for a good 12 months.
He was. I think we debated this because there's always the people that don't want to sell because they don't know how he's coming back from injury.
Yeah.
But even after the comeback, people lost faith in him and he dropped off a little bit this year.
Yeah.
I think those people were definitely regretting their jumping off the Jamal Murray train prematurely, I think.
Yeah. Look, I think to me it's pretty evident now that his fan base is quite strong. And I think that injury period sort of reinforces that for me. I think the next thing on my mind too is he's really going to be getting a lot of attention for the rest of this year. Now he's going to be on national TV and in the finals. I think that's going to help his value a lot.
He's got at least four more games of basketball to come this year, right?
Yeah. If we're being honest, Denver doesn't get a lot of attention. Actually, I've got a bone to pick with, not you specifically, but like you and your Lakers cronies. So... The Denver Nuggets eviscerate the Los Angeles Lakers. Yeah. Where are the ESPN cameras? Are they focusing on Jamal Murray, the Joker, celebrating with their coach? No. Following out LeBron James to Cancun. That, to me, is like abysmal and just the worst part about modern
You should write a letter media. To ESPN about that.
And can I be honest? You're almost getting me on a rant there, you and your Lakers fans. And can I be honest with you? I'm actually proud that we've spoken about the Denver Nuggets throughout this year. And we're not like some, you know, national media thing like ESPN that doesn't actually talk about the real issues. There's still more people currently talking about the Lakers now than the Denver Nuggets.
You know the one thing I haven't done since we got swept?
Talked
about the Lakers.
What are you going to talk about, their holiday destination?
I was a guest on a friend's podcast. We were doing our predictions, and I actually said the Lakers would lose to the Nuggets in the Western Conference Finals.
Yeah.
At the beginning of the playoffs. I said we were gonna win our first series, we're gonna win our second series, we're gonna lose to the Nuggets because the Nuggets are gonna win the championship.
They're just a really good team.
That said, Miami look like they might be about to blow a 3-0 lead.
Yeah.
We have a game 7.
I mean, we can probably do spoilers by now, but there was a little bit of luck for that last play for Boston.
Tiny bit. And who was the one that hit the buzzer beater?
Your boy.
Derek White.
Did you see, though, that the game clock was adjusted from 2.1 seconds to 3? And so if that had stayed at 2.1, it would have been over. Yeah.
Yep. Conspiracy. Let's not derail the conspiracy theories.
Okay. Last derail, and then we'll move on. Okay. So, have you heard about the referee that is being currently investigated and potentially being suspended?
No.
Okay. So I don't think this is probably the forum to do it because, you know, we're a basketball card, not like a conspiracy theory launch. If you want to go down a rabbit hole of conspiracy theories, go onto Twitter and search for Eric Lewis. I might even pin some of the stuff onto a post. there was the footage of Jimmy Butler making that bucket, then the referee rolling his head in the background. That's actually not Eric Lewis, but I think some of the disdain that people had towards the referees then escalated into them finding out about what Eric Lewis was doing. So he's basically this like diehard Boston Celtics fan, and so is his whole family. And then the record against the Lakers when he referees is 2-30. So if that's true, that's not a statistical.
No. Accident. That's a if you see him reffing a Lakers game, you back the other team.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
nice.
Yep. All right. So what we were talking about was Ja Morant versus Jamal Murray. So which card are you picking at?
As much as I like Murray's game right now. And I have to say, Ja hasn't got much game right now, be it on the court or off the court. He's in struggle town. I'm probably buying Ja Morant.
Yeah.
Just because he's in a slump. I'm looking to buy the Ja on the dip. Because I think we might be close to the floor, we might not be, but like that's headed in the right direction to if things turn around to make a bit of profit on that for sure. Whereas Murray, okay. I think, I don't know, the Denver factor is real. Look at the Joker.
Well, how about you say you're going to buy Ja Morant and then I'll do Jamal Murray in that case.
Sweet.
Because to be honest, you could argue me either way. So I think the very strong reasons for buying Jamal Murray is that it's more of a safe pick, whereas I think Ja Morant is literally going to be like boom or bust.
Mm.
And I think our friend of the show, Al Kane's, his line with Ja Morant is that he's the next Latrell Sprewell. So maybe that's a good comp, you know, before you dip into Ja.
Oh, yeah.
You do that. And then for Jamal Murray, on the other hand, I think this is more like a steady stock that is, you know, just progressively over the time, either going to hold its value or go up a little bit. The reason why you should be optimistic, though, is I think because of that media thing that we were just, you know, joking about. Even though I'm joking about, I'm actually very serious about it. Like, I think there's not enough media attention on this team. This Denver team is amazing.
Yeah.
And I think, obviously, you know, the majority of that playmaking comes from the Joker, but, you know, a very steady chunk of that comes from Murray. And I really do think that this media attention they're going to get from the finals is going to help his value a lot. And then the flip side of that too is next year there's going to be a lot more games on national TV because the sort of the tradition or the normal thing that happens is that the schedules will pick up the champions and put them on tally a bit more. So, you know, I think next year they might get a bit more court time.
A bit more focus as far as the big brand. Yeah. Yeah.
We had a couple of answers on social media about this, but I think the best answer we had was from Andrew Hewitt. So personally, I think Ja is a buy now. Hear me out. The amount of people who came back into the hobby during the 18-19, 19-20 COVID lockdown period is what shot card values and box prices through the roof. This card, no matter what happens, will hold a spot in most collectors' hearts. I think that's what he was trying to say. I think people need to realize that we have had it too good for too long with no controversy. The greats in today's game a squeaky clean, e.g. LeBron James, Steph Curry. I agree with that 100%, by the way. Going backwards in time, it wasn't so perfect. Jordan had allegations of gambling. Kobe had allegations brought into court. The list goes on. What Ja has done isn't illegal, but stupid, yes. His on-court gameplay is what makes him a great player. Think of it like this. It would be your job work that you do, bring up something from your private life, then sacking you with that pay. There's lots of variables that go into card values, but based on the court play, I'm going Ja. And then he just puts in a disclaimer that he's got a couple of PSA 10 silver, and that's fine. It's totally fine to have a horse in the race, Andrew, by the way, mate.
Yeah.
And look, I do agree with that point of view because if you do think about it, he hasn't had a mortal injury and it's not that his play has dropped off.
Yeah.
I suppose, you know, the question is, what if he can't get his act together and he's just a naughty boy? And, you know, at some point, you're going to drive your employer crazy. Or in this instance, you're going to get the attention of Adam Silver, like essentially the school principal. That's the other way of saying it. And it's maybe you're going to get expelled. Like, you know. So.
That's true. What do you do? I do like, as I said, I would personally buy a Jar. and I'd be waiting for probably a month or two to do that, like wait for that dip. That
I was going to say, yeah. Technically, the question is, what would you buy right now?
Mm.
But I agree with what you're saying now. I think the time is going to be in. Actually, the time is going to be is 1 month before he returns from suspension. So I think if you're serious about this, you need to sit down with a calendar.
Yeah.
Wait for his suspension to be announced and then buy it a month before.
Yeah. Yeah. Time like, it. That timing is going to be is everything, especially in this hobby.
Yeah.
Although on the flip side, I do like what Eidos has said.
Okay. Do you want to read through that one, mate?
It's a very quick one. Jamal Murray.
Yeah, that's
they
fine.
Might win three in a row, dynasty style. The pop count, sky is the limit.
Yeah, the pop's low. He's right.
It's a low pop count. It's like, what is it, 180 or something?
He's baiting Lakers fans, man. Don't go for it. 187, you're right. Yeah, it's insane the comparison, isn't it?
187.
Yeah.
Yeah, versus what? 1,533? It's a bit of a difference. Alrighty. Pop count-wise.
Pocket change. Travis Parker, $2. A Trey Mann number to 149 Essentials. A Trey Mann number to 149 Chronicles. I'm getting a theme here. And then a Trey Mann, $4.25.
Did you say a Trey Mann?
I did.
Another one. I'm sorry. I just had to interrupt. More Trey Manns.
That's totally fine. So the last one, the 149, the red, that's from the Crusades. The Crusades from 2 years ago is one of my favorite inserts ever. It's check it out. It's a really, really cool card. Yep.
It's interesting. I remember when Crusade was its own set. They were great.
Those were the days.
Oh, back in my day, cards were cards. No, I don't know. All right, Lachlan Blunt.
Yeah.
A nice Bernard King. National Treasures. On-card auto by the look of it to 99. 760 US. That's impressive.
Perfection. Yeah, that's what you want in your collection.
Yeah.
That's why I love this segment. It's a really good example of spending time. You can actually pick some up stuff that's just fantastic for your collection.
Yeah.
On a budget.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We got David Ralph. Who have we got here? Oh, it's that Luca guy. Number two. For $1.
Can't go wrong.
Like it. Like a bit of dollar box goodness.
So that's the modern strokes out of Court Kings. And number to 99 to boot. So, yeah, massive pickup there, mate. Matty Tabe with his Shaq Rising Stars insert from $94.95 for $12. That is perfect.
Delicious, yeah. Nice. What we got? All right. Scotty James. Always loved JR, especially when he was on the Knicks. He's been picking up a few cheapies. So we've got a Court Kings Portraits. JR Smith numbered to 5.
Beautiful.
16. Oh, so basically for $25. 1664 US. Nice. Very nice.
Perfect. Yep.
There's the next one. We were speaking about this gentleman before.
We were. It's almost like you knew what we're going to talk about. Oh,
another one from Scotty James. Also watched Pac-Man open 2014 Prism. Love the look. So I went chasing some colors of players I liked. So he was already on the color match. Back in 2014. So beautiful. We have an Amari Stoudemire, big number one for the Knicks in the blue. Blue Mojo. Alrighty. I don't know if that's numbered or not, but yes.
No, I don't think that one is actually. Can I do the next one?
Oh, you can.
Right. So this is a WNBA card. It's an on-card autograph of Penny Taylor. So Penny's actually an Aussie. Now, this particular set is from 2008.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually have one on my desk literally right now. I'm a huge fan of this set. I don't have a lot of WNBA, but this particular set is just fantastic.
Nice.
I picked up a Becky Hammond. I'm a big Becky Hammond fan, so I wanted to have like one auto in my set. And yeah.
Yep.
So yeah, Dane, that is an absolutely amazing pickup.
That's an awesome pickup, and yeah.
Yeah. Those cards actually, I would say they consistently go between $10 and $20.
Yeah.
So if you like the look of them, you want an on-card autograph of the WNBA girls, like they're just, absolute no-brainer.
No, that's all right. That's cool. Is that it?
This next section, yeah, quick one.
Nice. I like the image, Lachlan, by the way. Love the image.
Thank you, as always, Lachlan. It's very appreciated. This next segment is from Ryan Jewell. So this is a follow-on from last week's segment when we talk about base cards.
Oh, yep.
And he wanted to continue that conversation on around photogenics.
Yep.
And basically, this set, it's actually, now that Ryan's raised this, it's actually silly we didn't mention this last week, because this set is literally all about that. They just put in amazing photographs into the set.
Yep.
They do a couple of not action shots, some still shots, and I have to admit I'm probably not the biggest fan of that. And then the other thing to sort of mention out of these photogenics is that they do autographs too. Now, the really funny thing about the autographs is the price. So you're going to enjoy this. A Scotty Barnes, who was the Rookie of the Year, sold for $74. And Austin Reeves, and there's multiple comps on this, sold between $62 and $89.
What?
Yeah. Look, actually, the autograph cards are decent. I would say that they're better than Prism, but they're less than Noir, less than iMac. Do you know what I mean? They're sort of sitting in that sort of not quite the middle, but
it's funny. I'm just better than the low. I'm just like, oh look, there's a Dwight Howard one. I'm like, nah, he's getting posterized by Ja Morant. Oh god.
So, photogenics was a bit of a funny set because it wasn't distributed in the normal fashion. It was a Panini Direct product.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. And the resale on it wasn't fantastic. And it also came out during that time where the flip was starting to die off a little bit. Yeah. So I didn't comp this at all for the show, but I suspect you'd still be able to get sealed boxes of this for a pretty reasonable price. It's not a high-end product at all. But as you can see from some of the photos on eBay and also on the thread here,
yeah,
definitely something to check out. They are fantastic.
Yeah, no, very nice action shots. Yeah, good pick up.
So thanks, Ryan. You pointed out something that frankly is a no-brainer. You're 100% right, buddy. All right, I got this one for you, Ad. A theoretical question.
A theoretical question.
This is from Sports Cards Nonsense. If one was to, say, obtain all 5 cards of a 5 of 5 set, would it be a smart investment decision to destroy 4 of those cards on camera to elevate the remaining to a 1 of 1.
Whoa!
And before you answer, I just want to point this out that I'm including this because for me, this is like the worst part of the hobby. This is the stuff I actually hate. The fact that someone would even consider to destroy 5 cards to increase the value of 1.
How much you love what I mean? Not destroying cards.
Yeah, I can't even throw away a base card. So you are literally talking to the wrong person about this. But I there's a high level of comedic like acumen on this for me. So I wanted to hear your thoughts.
I don't know. Is it having all 5 having a 1 of 1? Tell me anybody else that's going to have all 5 of the 5.
That's it. Yeah. That's
Do you know what I mean?
You control the market. Absolutely.
It's I'd just be, there's no comps on this card. Why? Because I've got all 5 of them. What a dilemma.
Do you think this guy's serious?
No. Got to be taking the piss, doesn't he? 129 comments. I'm not going to dig through that.
Would you do it?
No.
Yeah.
I'd show it off as and say, this has got to be better than the 1 of 1. I've got all 5 of the number to 5.
Like the 5 on your shelf. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Seriously, though, what is the probability of obtaining that, though?
Ooh.
Because have you ever seen that?
I've never seen somebody.
Just for the fact that, you know, not all product gets opened. It's probably sitting in someone's bottom of the cupboard for all you know. Yeah.
I've seen people with number to 10 chases and they've got, like 6 or 7 of the 10. I've seen like across social media, but never like all 5 of the chase to 5 cards. Like, I mean, there's a lot of rainbow chasers that try to get, once they've got the 1 of 1, the number to 5 is the hard one to find, but you're never getting multiples in the low numbers. No, that's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe that's harder than doing a rainbow. Oh, actually, no, let's not go down this rabbit hole of the number of parallels these days.
Yep. No.
I can feel God. Paris's
judgment.
Disdain.
Yeah. Yeah. Nah. You're right. I feel the judgment.
This next tweet came from @RunGoodLife. The industry is crashing. The industry is crashing. A card pulled from a $500 box in 2017 only sold for $138,000. I repeat, a piece of cardboard with some ink on it only sold for $138,000. So focused on the three-year rise and fall that you don't see how up we are over 5 years. And I know Twitter is not always a healthy space, and I also know that Twitter can be an echo chamber. So this is clearly echoing my own thoughts. But I couldn't go past this tweet to bring it up to discuss it, because I think you do hear people saying from time to time, oh, the hobby's crashing, the hobby's in such a bad way. But I think this is a really good, you know, reality check of that. And then the second thing I'd like to raise too is when you go to a day like EJ Traders Cards and there's so many people there, you can't get a seat.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have anywhere to put your boxes to look through the cards. And you're constantly sidestepping people all day.
Yeah.
I find it very difficult to be convinced that the hobby is dying and the hobby is crashing and everything's so doom and gloom.
Yeah.
So
Look, I love the Chicken Little impression. Yeah. It's interesting. And look, our lovely friend, the collectibles guru. It's the
you can't go past Eric, by the way.
Now he talks about a card going on a wild ride. Given that it's a 2017 card, can we see the whole ride? I think that's what Chicken Little's trying to say, and by Chicken Little, I'm referring to Run Good Life. But
you've hit it on the head. That's exactly right. So Eric's looking at a very short time frame, and
that's narrative driving. That's very much narrative driving.
Right. And so as much as I love Eric, I think the criticism for Eric is sometimes that he does try to create narratives that, you know, maybe aren't there.
Yeah. Oh, look, the train that left the station about a year ago is the hobby is screwed. Everybody's jumping ship.
But to defend Eric for 2 seconds, though, on this particular card, what he's presented is actually 100% accurate.
Correct. No, I'm just saying it's the narrative behind it. Reporting of the data is tip top and spot on.
Yeah, yeah, totally. But
give us the whole story. Don't give us chapter 7 of the book. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and this is not a 7-chapter book either. So,
yeah. Look, it does depend on where you get on and get off at the train station, right?
I love the train
analogy.
Because
if you're the person that. Yeah, like if you're the person who hopped on at 840,000, hopped off at 630, like that's a dip.
And if you're the person who hopped on 138K, you're like, woo.
Yeah, but if you hopped on at 630 and jumped off at 138, like that's brutal.
It is,
you know.
It is, but got to be reason to sell at that price, right?
I got to tell you though, you know, the $2 and $3 cards that I buy out of like dollar bins, I'm not feeling so bad about losing 50% on them. Do you know what I'm saying? I'm doing all right, Ab.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, oh no, my $400 Charmerant's now worth $200.
Yeah,
there's $500,000 on a deal.
Yeah. That's
now. I'm not laughing at the person that lost the money. I'm laughing at the
$200. It's the totality of it.
It's just look. I think we all know that the hobby is experiencing a correction, a dip, whatever we want to call it. But it's the ebb and flow of history. These things happen with collectibles.
Yeah.
But over time, they trend up. They always trend up. And I think we said it through about the COVID spike, the infamous COVID spike. People were paying 10-year prices because the demand was so high.
Yeah.
And the demand will increase again. There will be demand again. It's a supply-demand industry. So
hold that thought, what you just said then, because that actually leads us into our next segment absolutely perfectly.
Yep.
Fanatics continued to push into the collecting space, acquires PWCC.
What a move.
So if you aren't familiar with who PWCC is, they're essentially an auction house.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they have had some critics of terms of running listings of, you know, trimmed cards and the like, but there's also a lot of people that think extremely highly of them and also how safe of a platform it is and how efficient it is in terms of getting your items in and out.
Yeah.
They also offer a vault, and they were, I don't know if they're still offering this, but they also offer a service where you essentially put your items into their vault and then you leverage, you borrow money off that, and then you could buy and sell more cards off that. So yeah, they also offer that.
It's a ballsy move, isn't it?
Well, if we remember back to the manifesto, their vision was that they would be a one-stop shop. And this to me just, you know, I don't think we need to analyze this very much further.
You reckon they'll offer trimming services as part of their one-stop shop?
Oh, that's Eric. Eric offers that. If he's employed by Fnatic, he'll be trimming those cards up like crazy.
It's all right. He's been selling a lot of kits. There might be available trimmers out there. Anyway.
Yeah. So what you were just talking about then in terms of money, so at the bottom of that ESPN article that I linked in, in 2021, global sports memorabilia market, including trading cards, was valued at $26 billion. By 2032, it's expected to eclipse $220 billion. No company has a bigger footprint in that space or stands to in the coming years. And they're talking about Fnatic in that instance.
Wow.
So that's food for thought, isn't it? You know?
That's crazy. That's 10Xing in 10 years, basically, right?
Yeah.
I'm a little bit dubious. We spoke about 10-year prices.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, I'm a bit dubious of that number personally, but at the same time, look, even if you have a 10% rise, that's still...
Look, okay, if they get halfway there and they get to 110 billion.
I was going to say, what if we get to 30 billion? That's still juicy.
But half of the predicted value is
Wow. Yeah.
Like,
it's still wild, isn't
it? We only got to 50% of our forecast. Oops, you're only doing over $100 billion.
Yeah.
Like, so crazy, yeah.
The little nugget that I read in here, though, is that Fnatic also bought PointsBet for $150 million, which essentially is a sports betting and digital casino. So
are they the one that Shaq does, PointsBet?
I mean, Shaq endorses everybody, so I think that's a very loose
Allen Iverson
arrow to draw, but okay. I don't know. Probably.
I don't know. We're not endorsing betting apps, by the way. We're just checking. We're fact checking.
No. And we don't have sponsorship from betting apps. And that's a decision that we made. But I will add this, is that I think that whether we like it or not, I think there is some crossover between gambling and sports cards due to the luck element of when you're opening up boxes and also the dollars that we're handling.
Yeah.
So you can agree with me or disagree with me on that, but you know, I think there is some parallels there. So they spoke about that Fnatic spoke about the hobby market hasn't been advertised enough. And I wonder if those two things will go hand in hand in terms of advertising and cross promotion and deals that can be made. So I think they're really thinking big picture here. And so I do have a little bit of struggle of understanding why Fnatic wants to own PointsBet, but at the same time, I can imagine how it could work together quite nicely.
Yeah. Interesting.
What's your final thoughts on this, Ad?
I feel like we're looking at the tip of the iceberg, and that iceberg is big enough to sink something bigger than the Titanic. This Fnatic thing, we're still two and a half years out from the official sort of handover. Is it 25, 26 that they take effect? But you can just see the wheels are turning, the moves, they're not holding back. They are making moves and they're making bold moves.
They're thinking big. I think that's the part.
I think what we used to think was a big move is about to be redefined. Like, you can see what Fnatic are doing.
Yeah.
It's going to be...
It's impressive.
It's impressive. It's exciting. It's going to be a brave new world. And look, those 10-year prices, maybe they're not as far-fetched as we thought. Yeah. We'll see what happens. We'll see what happens in the collecting space once the handover sort of happens, because obviously the way it's managed will dictate how the market responds, how the other people in the hobby respond.
Have to have an Andrew Gaze into the future.
Yes, yeah. Luke Longley with anticipation.
Alrighty, so our last segment of the day is a little bit of OC content. So we're going to look at the last 10 rookies of the year. And it was actually something that came off social media. So I thought we could do our own little remix or our own little flavor on it. And then, so what I've done is I've gone back through and found each rookie of the year's last comp of a PSA 10 silver.
Okay.
I've also put down the pop count. And then if appropriate, I'll put some down some notes. The other thing I thought would might be interesting is to look at the last 12 months, what's happened to the sale value. Okay. So hopefully this will give us a little bit of an overview of, you know, what's happened in the last 12 months. It'll give us a bit of an overview of where the population counts are, and then also to, you know, pricing, obviously. So
can I laugh? Before I forgot that Michael Carter-Williams won Rookie of the Year.
Yeah, I mean, that was a little bit of a pumped up one because if you remember, that was that Philadelphia team that really had no one else and he was just doing, you know, everything.
Yeah, true.
So just before we push through this, Banchero, there's really no pop count on him. And actually, I couldn't find a silver PSA 10 sold comp. So I just pulled a couple of other ones and I thought we could just work off that.
Have a look at now, it,
Really interestingly, Scotty Barnes, there's no pop data on.
Wow. And in fact,
so I found a sold price on the silver PSA 10, but actually it's not in the PSA registry yet, and neither was it on Gemrate. So that's a bit of an interesting one.
Is he under a different name or something weird, or is it?
Oh, look. No, I found him on there, but it just had – there was pop counts in the nines, but there was nothing in the tens. I'm assuming just the data takes a little while to populate through.
Yeah, that's fair.
That's what I'm assuming.
Okay, and he's not on card ladder.
No, it's too soon. Yeah. It takes a little while for card ladder to put all together.
Wow.
So the really interesting thing for me, the other, this is my final takeaway of this, just at a very high level, is look how much data there is between 2021 and 2017. Even 2016, they're starting to get a bit more data. So, and then
it just tapers off.
Yeah, well, I wonder if that data just hasn't sort of like reeled through yet, but I'm really kind of excited a little bit over the next 10 years as more and more data gets available to us and we can sort of synthesize this and break it down and sort of look at it. So,
You know what? We're gonna make this an introduction to this Rookie of the Year thing because I reckon I'm gonna call out right now and I said I would like to speak to Ryan about it, or I'd like Ryan from Gemrate to give us a call. Or I'm curious now.
So look, obviously this is my very amateur attempt at what Ryan does professionally, but yeah, of course we'd love to hear Ryan's feedback.
Interesting thing because it's one thing to look at the number one draft pick, but I think like Rookie of the Year, I wonder like he likes challenges, doesn't he? What about the top three in the Rookie of the Year voting?
We might have to help him with the work on that. Probably tell him which players they are. Yeah. We can at least do something.
He can extrapolate it, I bet you. In just data. He's living in the Matrix. He created the Matrix.
What did you take away from this ad?
You can see sometimes the award is a flash in the pan award in my eyes. You can see the way that the market's been trending based on the data that you've got. But the negative in the last 12 months, the trajectory, I don't think there's any surprises, but the values, like you look at Malcolm Brogdon, right? He just won Sixth Man of the Year.
Yeah.
And Brogdon might be an interesting one to look at next week because he's a key piece on a team, but how does that reflect hobby-wise?
Yeah.
I like the fact that Ben Simmons has a red highlight. I'm guessing that means just don't talk about him.
No. I actually tried to do the colors to the team.
Oh, okay.
If you notice, Ben Simmons and Michael Carter-Williams were drafted by the same team, so they've got the same color. But obviously it wasn't obvious.
No, that's sorry. That's all right. I just think, Michael Carter-Williams and Ben Simmons, I don't know. Actually, no, I reckon they'll have about the same value soon. Anyway, Wiggins is an interesting one.
Wiggins is actually the one I want to talk about the most.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of good reason in my mind that he's down 74%. He did sit out a bit
lot
the
of
season.
The season,
I will
I
agree
think,
with that.
Yeah. Maybe. But
if you think about his career in total, overall he's been putting up a reasonable amount of points. He was incredibly reliable when they won the championship with him.
Yeah.
In fact, I would actually go so far to say they wouldn't have won that chip without his rebounding.
I tend to agree, yeah.
And his defensive versatility. Like, yep. That to me was – I actually thought he played sublime in that series. So I'm – you know, if I'm looking at any of these and was going to pick one up if you know, forced me to, I would say the Wiggins is the one that's probably the most undervalued but also has a bit of maybe punch in it.
Yeah. Well, I'm actually interested in the Brogdon price is intrigues me, but the fact that he's a sixth man, not a main guy, is probably concerning.
Yeah, yeah.
Still, for Silver Prism, he's probably worth more than 70.
I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know. But yeah, Wiggins stands out. It's an interesting list.
So the decrease over the last 12 months. Simmons is down the most at 74%. The person who dipped the least is Luka at 35%.
Because everyone still loves him. Everyone's
yeah. Yeah. I think that actually does show the market strength for Luka.
Yeah.
So he's currently sitting at 1,363. The population on that, though, was 2,200.
Mm. Yeah, it's interesting, the pop counts.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. So my question to you about that is, does that make it a good buy or a bad buy at 1,300? US
you know
dollars.
My stance on Luka, right? I think he's very overrated. I think he's definitely – it's not a – I don't think that's a good buy. I think there's too many cards to start with, and I don't think he's done enough with his career, with his short career, but
yeah,
like to warrant the price he's at. I think there's a lot of projected pricing based on future potential, and I think there's just a big risk as time goes on. When a player doesn't meet that potential, that it becomes a bad investment. So
I just wonder, at those prices with that pop count that's like that, do you look at ungraded and PSA 7, PSA 8, but numbered cards?
Oh, okay.
Do you know what I mean? Because if the population is 2,000, like that's
a lot.
And that's just tens. Like that is a lot. And I'm not trying to be a Debbie Downer about it.
No. But we looked at
on the record.
We looked at the
I think Luka is a very good buy, by the way.
There's over 20,000 base cards at PSA 10. Not that we said, remember, of this era, the base cards has just been flooded between Zion and Luka, right? But 20,000 in base and 2,000 in silver.
Yeah,
that's a lot. Look, you look at Wiggins; it's less than 100. That is a legitimately rare card. And if they're really accessible, then they hold less. I'm actually surprised at the amount of Ben Simmons. The pop count is so low, but I think it's because in Australia it felt like everybody was collecting Ben Simmons, and that could just be a local thing.
How many silver PSA 10s did you see, though?
No, I just saw everybody was after Ben. I just felt like everyone was trying to, like, it was, I don't know. I thought my gut told me that there'd be more, but the number that surprises me is LaMelo.
You'd think there'd be more, right?
Yeah, I thought it'd be closer to 1,000.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. See, so my take on that was the time when grading was like $500 a card.
Ooh.
$200 and $300 a card.
That's probably a good market correction, though, if Melo pans out to be a decent player.
They just stamped – they literally stamped it out. You can see the drop, $1,500 for Jar, $200 for LaMelo.
Yeah.
Like, no one was getting cards graded during that time. It
19
was just,
and 20 cards are just flooded.
Yeah.
And then you've got the correction. You're right, yeah. I love your narrative, your notes for Jar Morant. Recent gun issues.
Just in case you haven't heard, Scallywag's been on Instagram again.
A simple case of the gentleman losing his marbles. Anyway.
Yeah. Alrighty. So I think if you're listening to this at home, this segment might not translate too well without statistics. So what I'll do is, for this week's podcast description, I'll put the link directly to this post in it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, this will be on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can't comp this. We'd love you to get on and give your thoughts and opinions about it. We'd love to hear what you have to say. So
jump on the socials, give your feedback, do some research on other cards they may be. It's an interesting topic, though, to see how not just the number one draft pick, but the rookie of the year has fared card-wise, hobby-wise, over the last decade.
Well, that's it for this week. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you, Adam, for coming along and having a chat to us.
It was great. I'm sorry I missed out on the trade day. I'm looking forward to the next one. I'm gonna make sure that even if work calls, I am down. I want to trade cards.
Just say you're already engaged. Yeah,
that's it.
Yeah,
I'm. It's happening.
Look, I'm actually gonna go down again. I think that the layout down there is just beautiful, and we don't have to wait for a trade day to go down.
We could just go down and just trade people.
Yeah,
were any kids traded? That's my only question.
No children were traded. It was a safe space for everyone.
No adults either.
No adults.
I'm sure there are a bunch of wives that are like, "We'll trade husbands. Like, you can have, you know,
just take them.
Just take them. Yeah. I don't want. Give me a repack. Whatever."
Yeah.
Oh boy. All right.
All righty, guys. Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys. We'll see you next week.